Ein Kriyas HaTorah Parsha Sachri Mos, that's a din deraisa. So too in conjunction with Asiyas Parah Aduma. Not every year when you read Parshas Parah before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. No. When you're making a Parah Aduma every few hundred years, when the Bezdin is supervising making a Parah Aduma, so the Kohen who does the Parah Aduma has to read the Parshas Chukas. That's Taka Gemara that says that. But the others assume not so, because this sounds like Parshas Parah is their rice. Every year is their rice. How can it be their rice? So the stipler wants to make a suggestion, maybe Parshas Parah is their rice, and not on the tzibur that they have a chi of their rice to hear it. It says in the pasuk, v'hizartem is b'nei yisrael mitumasim, v'leitamo es mishkanam. V'hizartem means v'hifrashtem. So that's an ashora Bezdin has to see to it that the people don't enter the Mikdash in a state of tumah. So that's why the Rabbanut has a sign by the gate that goes to the other side of the Kosel HaMaravi. So the sign says, according to Jewish law, Jewish people are not allowed to go into the Har HaBayis because we're all Tameh Bizman HaZeh. So that's what Hizartan is Bnei Yisrael. So that's what the stipler suggests. Maybe what Tais is meant to say, Parsha Sporos Derais, that there's a Chi of Derais and the Bezdin, that they should announce in public, in the newspapers, or on the radio, on the television, by Kriyas HaTorah, whatever, every so often they should announce that the people who are Tomei should be careful not to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, because that's what it says in Parshas Chukas, V'hizartem es b'nei yisrael mitumasim. Rabbi Baruch Epstein, the author of the Torah Tmima, has an autobiography where he writes all kinds of fascinating things about his family, and then he writes different things and learnings. He quotes from somebody, I forgot already who, he quotes a novel interpretation that the Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvah deletes around 1617 mitzvahs asay from the Rambam's listing, and so too mitzvahs leisasay has to replace them with other mitzvahs, because the Gemara tells us that there are sachakol 613 mitzvahs, 248 mitzvahs asay, 365 mitzvahs leisasay. So he has a list of mitzvahs asay that the Rambam forgot to count, because he has to replace the 1617 that he's deleting with another 1617. So he said possibility. Zochareis Hashem Tzavtas Hashem Alakecha Bamidbar. It says in Chumash Dvarim we should remember the Cheto Egel. The Ramban in the Sefer Mitzvah is not sure whether that's a tzibri only to the Dor Amidbar who were involved in the Cheto Egel, or it's a din ledoris. We should all remember the Cheto Egel. Why should we all have a mitzvah to remember the Cheto Egel? Like by the Catholics, they believe that because of the original sin, everyone is born into the world in sin. Everyone's soul is tarnished. Every morning, when you put the neshama into my body, it's pure. If I do averus, I'll be mekalkel, and I have the ability to cleanse it. I can do tshuva. So we don't assume like that. So what should we walk around? Everyone should walk around with a guilty feeling, a guilty conscience, that we're all involved in the Chet HaEgel. So what it means probably is like this, that the Gemara tells us that it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't really make sense that Klal Yisrael, after witnessing Esamakas and Kriyas Makas Becheres and Kriyas Yamsuf and Maimon HaSina, it doesn't make sense that they should go and make an Egel. The whole story does make sense. They had Gilui Shechina so many times over. So the Gemara says in the normal course of events they would have been able to exercise their Bechira Chavshis, they would certainly not have sinned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu suspended their Bechira Chavshis and caused them to sin. Why in the world did he want to cause the Jewish people to sin with Avodah Zarah? Kedei lahoris tshuva l'rabim. And that's how the Chazal's comment on the pasuk of Ayav Hashem al pono v'yikro miloshen shliach tzibbe ha'oivu lefnei ha'tevo. So Ayav Hashem al pono malambe shenisata v'akadosh bocho kishliach tzibor. And he told Moshe Rabbeinu, kol zman shabane choytim yasu lefone kiseder hazer v'ani mochalayim. Let them say yud gimel midas, and I will forgive them if they do tshuva and they recite yud gimel midas. That's what we do. Slichas, that's what we do in the tiny sibur. The chazan gets up, and shenisata v'akadosh bocho means HaKadosh Baruch Hu put on the talis in the vision that Moshe Rabbeinu had. He envisioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu as wearing a talis, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu recited yud gimel midas, and that's what we do. So the whole purpose of the Chet HaEgel was caused by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kedei lahoris tshuva l'rabim. So Rashi, in his commentary on Parshas Chukos, quotes from Ramosha Hadarshan that the mitzvah Parah Aduma is to serve as a kapara for the Chet HaEgel, because the Parah is the mother of the Egel. And the expression goes, when the baby has a dirty diaper, it's So you get the mother to clean the baby's diaper. So the mitzvah of paraduma was given to serve as a kapara for the chet ha'egel. So the Magen Avraham raises a question. Magen Avraham quotes a Yalkut Shemayni that says the same as Ramban. He didn't have a mitzvah la Ramban. So the Magen Avraham quotes a Yalkut Shemayni, says like that, by the simon of Abba Rabba. What kavanas are you supposed to have when you say Abba Rabba? So the Magen Avraham says you have all the sheish zechiras there in Abba Rabba. So then he raises the question, why did the Chacham only make a Parsha Zohar once a year, every year? And the SOY makes a special in Shabbos, and they have special speakers, and Gabbai makes an announcement. Everybody should have a mind to be Yotze with the Kriya, with the Brachas. Why not do the same by Parshas Chet HaEgel, and by Chet Miyam? Also, that should also be a mitzvah. The Ramban counts that as one of the mitzvahs. Zohar is how Shasu Shamel Kechel Miriam, but Dech Pitzes one time. So the Magen Aram says it's Ginusim Shel Osa Tzadekis to make a special Parsha Kriya Satorah for Chet Miriam. And it's a Gnai from Bnei Yisrael, we should make a special Parsha for Chet HaEgel. So the Magen Aram says, we're Yotze when we learn Parshas Kisisa. When we read about the Chet HaEgel and Kisisa, we're Yotze. Just like it says in Shulchan Aruch that if you miss Parshas Zohar and Shabbos Zohar, you can be Yotze when it comes to Parshas Kisitza. You can be Yotze on Purim, the Mechaba says, when you hear Vayyav HaMalek. So you can be Yotze with that. So the Chachamim didn't want to make a special takana of Parshas Chet HaEgel and Parshas Chet Miriam. They said everybody should have a mind to be Yotze when they read that in the Parshas HaShavua. So that's what Baruch Epstein quotes those who suggest. They did make a special Parsha. That's the Parshas Parah. The whole mitzvah to remember that even if the entire nation worships Avodah Zarah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's prepared to forgive them. There is a kapara for that too. So by learning Parshas Parah, this is the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Zechiras Chet HaEgel. Because the whole purpose of Zechiras Chet HaEgel is to remember that even if the entire community did Avodah Zarah, it's possible for everybody to be mitar themselves. On the opening pasuk in the Shabbos is also Parsha Shmini. In addition to being Parsha's part, it's also Parsha Shmini. The opening pasuk in Parsha Shmini, Rashi quotes from the Seder Olam. Seder Olam is a history book by the Tana Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta. The Gemara quotes it every so often. Halachas from Rabbi Yossi's history book. So the tradition has it that the last 7 days in Chodesh Adar, was Shivas Yimei Miluim, and Shmini the Miluim was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and the first 12 days in Chodesh Nisan, the Nisim were bringing their special Karbonis for Chanukah Samizbeach. So Rashi quotes from the Seder Olam, Osa Hayom, that day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Notal Eser Atoras. It was the first in 10 different meanings. It was a Sunday, and it was Rosh Chodesh, and it was the first month, it was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and it was the first day that a Kohen did Avodah, because the 7 days Shivas Me'amilu, Moshe Rabbeinu did the Avodah. That was a Hayru Ashur, and that was the first day that a Kohen did the Avodah. And it was a whole bunch of other firsts. It was the first on 10 different accounts. So the Achreinim Abadad with the Kasha, the Gemara tells a story that around 100 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni, on one occasion, Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos. There was nobody who remembered what the din is. What's so unusual by us, it's pretty common. Every couple of years, Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. So there was nobody who remembered whether Hakrovas Korban Pesach is Deicha Shabbos or not. Until Hillel showed up. Hillel had come from Bavel, and he wasn't around in Eretz Yisrael for quite a while. He pops up, and then he says he has a tradition for Shmai V'Avtalyan that Korban Pesach is Deicha Shabbos. So the Achreinim Abadid with Akasha, if Rosh Chodesh Nisan is on a Sunday, that's what Rashi says, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is on a Sunday. So then the 14th of Nisan is going to be on a Shabbos. So the original Korban Pesach, well, the original Korban Pesach was Pesach Mitzrayim, but the first Pesach Midbar, the one Korban that they brought in, the once in the 40 years of traveling in the Midbar that they brought a Korban Pesach, was the first year after Yitzias Mitzrayim. So that was Deicha Shabbos. So why was there a suffix in later generations? So what you have to say is, for some reason or another, the way to negotiate it is to say that Doris Mishor Loy Alfina. That was a Hayru Ashur. The fact that they brought Korban Pesach and Midbar was a Hayru Ashur. Under the normal rules and regulations, there shouldn't have been like the Korban Pesach Mitzrayim. That was a Hayru Ashur. That wasn't normal. There was no Mizbeach. They didn't do Zrikas Adam on the Mizbech, they did Zrikas Adam on Shtei HaMezuzos V'Ala Mashkoif. Everything in Chal Tamosa B'Chipozen, Masnechem Chagurim, Nalechem Raglechem, Akelchem Yadchem, everything was different, Korban Pesach Mitzrayim. And even Pesach Midbar, which was pretty normal, you have to say for some reason or another, and that's what the different Achrayim are fishing around. What's the reason or another? You have to say for some reason or another that that was a Hayra Shua, that was irregular, and even though that was the Chashabbos, Doris Misholei Afinam. That's what you have to say. So different Achrayim have different suggestions. Why was it a Hayra Shua? Where does this concept, Doris Misholei Afinam, come from? Happens to be in today's Sedra. Happens to be in today's Sedra. Moshe Rabbeinu heard that they burnt his ir achatos dorosh darash Moshe v'hinei sorof v'iktzoif al b'nei Aharon. He got angry and he says, why did they burn it? I was instructed that even though everyone is in a state of anidus, I was told the chlor matzah zei kalam izbeach, even though an oinen is normally not permitted to eat korbanos, but I was told over here that they have to eat the korbanos. So Aaron responded and he said that it's not proper. So the Gemara explains what was Aaron's argument with Moshe Rabbeinu. So he said Moshe Rabbeinu gave him instructions, they should eat the korbanos in the state of haninus. He was only told that regarding the Hayra Shoa korbanos that were once in the history of the world. But which sir chatos was burned? Sir chatos darosh darash Moshe v'nei sarf each once. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara Zvachim Daf Kuf, the soyer rosh chodesh. The Soyer Nachshon was a Hayra Shoa, but the Soyer Rosh Chodesh is a regular Soyer. Every Rosh Chodesh you bring 11 Musafim, you bring 10 Oilas and one Soyer Lachatos. So Oila you burn on the Mizbech, and the Chatos is supposed to be eaten by the Zichri Kun and the Azara. So that's a Din L'Doros. So usually we have a Din, Amam Atzinim. Whenever the Chumash has a Din in one place, you say the Din applies in all other cases that are sufficiently similar. If it's dissimilar, then there's no mamatzinim. That's how you know, let's say, there are psukim to arba abas nezikim, shor bor, maver hever. How do you know, told the same kayotze behem? How do you know that not only if you dig a bor, that if you leave avnas tekinim asar b'shus harabim, and someone stumbles on it, that yechayiv. So the Gemara says it has the same properties as the original one. So it's a mamatzinim. Mamatzinim is a very common midrash alternate reshes behem that used in the Gemara very often. Another pasuk says, atzishitim omdim, by the Mishkan. So from the Mishkan you learn that any time that you need a natural item that grows from the ground, you have to have kederach gedilosim, even though the Pasuk only says it by the Mishkan. So here also, Moshe Rabbeinu was told that they should eat in a state of anina. So Aaron said, yeah, kol ha-terukula blends into one big picture. So that's why you learn out from midin echad l'chaveiro. But whatever Zahirasha is not part of that picture. So Moshe Rabbeinu was told as Hayra Shoa, they should bring these special karbanos once in the history of the world. And the Shmini Lemilohim was told they should eat the matzahs in the state of Aninus. He was never told that with respect to the karbanos ledor, respect to the musaf of Rosh Chodesh, the soy lachatos of Rosh Chodesh. So that was the argument of Aaron HaKohen, that Doris Mishol lo yafin. You can only learn out how Dinim Ladoris from Dinim Ladoris, because all Dinim Ladoris fit into one big pattern, one big system. But you can't learn that from a Hayra Shoa. So that's basically the answer that Achranim give on this kasha. Why don't we learn out from the Pesach Midbar that Korban Pesach is the Chashabbos? I say there must be some reason or another why the Pesach Midbar was a Hayra Shoa. Basically, there shouldn't have been a Chiyuv to bring Korban Pesach in the Midbar. Yes. That was what Hillel said. Hillel developed that din. He said, "Oh, we heard from Shmaya Rav Tanya. Whenever there's a karmish as mana kavua, the din is that is decha Shabbos and decha Tumah. The same rules." Yeah. But that's what the Bnei Bisera, who were the chief rabbis at that time, they were not aware of that klal, that karmish as mana kavua. And then they took an unusual step. They resigned from their position. They felt, how can they remain chief rabbis if they didn't know the ABC of Korbanos? So they stepped down from their position and they resigned and they said, we should appoint Hillel as the chief rabbi. So the Gemara says that was approximately 100 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni. 100 years before the Churban Bayis, Hillel was the chief rabbi and Shammai was the assistant chief rabbi. One was the Nasi and one was the Yabdesin. That's what the Gemara says in Chagiga, that all of the names that appear, all the Zugos who appear in Pirkei Avos, the first name that appears was the Nasi, the chief rabbi, and the second name that appears was the Abbez, means the assistant chief rabbi. So Hillel and Shammai were 100 years before the Churban Abayis. The Mefarshim also point out that it was Aaron HaKohen who argued this Kal V'chomer, that he's not permitted to eat in a state of not permitted to eat korbanos in a state of anidas. Moshe Rabbeinu never told him that. Moshe Rabbeinu only told them over the din, you're not allowed to eat Maaser Sheni in a state of anidas. When you recite Vidui Maaser, Erev Pesach of the fourth year, Erev Pesach of the seventh year, in the 7 year cycle. So you recite, if it's true, if it's not true, you don't say Vidui Maaser. If it's true, you say Biyarti HaKodesh Min Abayis, I gave away all the Maaser Sheni, V'gam Desat V'Lalevi, etc. And you say, Lo Biyarti Mimenu B'Tomei. I did not consume the Maaser Sheni when in the state of Anidas. So the Pasuk in Chumash only says about Maaser Sheni in the state of Anidas. Moshe Rabbeinu never told him a word about Karbonis in the state of Anidas. That's what Aaron HaKohen made a Kal V'chomer. So usually Kal V'chomer is from the Yud Gimel Midrash HaTorah and the Drash HaSpam as part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. And then Moshe Rabbeinu was masking with it, so Ribbono Shel Olam dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu to put it into the Chumash. So then it became Torah Shebichzav. But originally, at the time that it was developed, Aaron made this Kal V'chomer. That was a p'china of Torah Shebaal Peh. Then it was converted to become Torah Shebichzav. What is taka the din of an oinen? What's the definition of an oinen? So we have a din of oinen. There's manazem, mishemesim mutalafon of up until the kvura, so the relatives are not permitted to observe any mitzvahs. The Tosfos in beginning of Perek Mishemesim Mutalafonov, the Tosfos there quotes a line from the Talmud Yerushalmi, that Yerushalmi learns this out from a pasuk in Chumash that says, I already forgot the Lashon HaPasuk, you should observe the mitzvahs. Ko yimei chayecha, something like that. So the Yerushalmi darshins, yamim shata oisek b'chayim v'lo yamim shata oisek b'mesim. If you have mesim mutalafana, when a person is busy being metapel, is supposed to be busy being metapel in the kfuras ha-mesa, then one is not mechayev to do any mitzvahs. So the achrayim assume that that's drosha, that drosha is only an asmachta. That's not a real drosha gemura. The raisa, that this din of oinen, mishemesim mutalafana, not allowed to do mitzvahs, it's not a din deraisa, it's a din derabban. The din that the oinen is not allowed to eat maaser sheni, the Kal V'chomer, if not allowed to eat maaser sheni, Kal V'chomer is not allowed to eat kachim, that's a pasuk in Chumash, that's a din deraisa. Lo yachal to be oinen mimenu. Question is, the Rishonim ask that there seems to be a contradiction, that here, mishemesim mutalafanov, the Gemara says, right after the kvura is over, the same day, the oval has to do mitzvah. He davens mincha after the kvura. He puts on talis, he doesn't put on tefillin. The Gemara says, but he puts on his talis and he does other mitzvahs. He has to daven, and by the din of aninus, so the Gemara says, even after the kfur, even if the kfur is 1 o'clock in the afternoon, after the kfur is finished, he's still then he said there, I say, he's not allowed to eat. He's not allowed to eat maaser sheni and kachim, even after the kfur. The Gemara in Brachas has a machlokes. The Gemara in Tzvachim Daf Kuf has a shayla whether aninus laila is deraisa derabbanan. They buried the mace at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so up until the end of the day has a din of oinen. What do you say? Balaila also, laila also, awesome in atayr, awesome in derabbanan. A discussion in the Gemara. So isn't this a contradiction? When you get to the ptur mitzvahs, we say as soon as you finish the gvura. So the oval has to be oinen, is no longer oinen, has to do mitzvahs. And all of a sudden here, even after the kvura took place, he's still considered an oinen until the end of the day. That's avelus amrishon. It's a form of avelus amrishon. The whole day, he has to observe this form of avelus, not to be besimcha. Maaser sheni has to be eaten in a state of simcha, and karbonos has to be eaten in a state of simcha. Isn't that a contradiction? So the Rishonim raised the question. Soloveitchik used to say that it's a misnomer. In Yeridei, it says Hilchas Aninus, so he says it's not really Hilchas Aninus. To unrelated dinim, it really should say a Hilchas Mishem Mesem Utalafon. But it's too long a title, Hilchas Mishem Mesem Utalafon. So they put a word Aninus instead, but he says, Vlakarb Zalza has no Shaykhas with Aninus. Aninus is a din of Yom Rishon. It's a different din. When he's been toppling the Kfuras HaMeis, he's making arrangements with the Kfuras HaMeis, he's thinking about the mace. Yom shata isik the mesim. So the chachamim prohibited him from fulfilling mitzvahs. He thought that the two unrelated dinim. But the rishonim ask it as a stira. Tosvei harosh and other rishonim and brachas perk mishemesa ask it as a stira. They don't really give a straight answer. It's problematic. It's questionable what they answered over there. The parsha tells about Aaron HaKohen had four sons, and then Nadav Avihu died, and he was only left with Elozev Isam. So the din is in parshas, beginning of parshas and more, HaKohen is not permitted to be mitami to a meis unless it's one of the seven relatives. So the pasuk says, if it's a sister, lo yitama. So we mentioned several times this year there is a machlokes of Rekiva and Rabbi Shmuel in Masechet Soitan Daf Gimel Amud Aleph with respect to three psukim in Chumash. Lo yitam is one of the three psukim. Rabbi Shmuel says lo yitam is a rishus. If the kohen wants to, he's permitted to be mitame to the zayin krayvim, to the seven relatives. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to. Rabbi Kiva disagrees, and we pass like Rabbi Kiva that it's a chayva. What's it doing in Soitan Daf Gimel? Because in Soitan there's also parsha Soitan. There's also such a pasuk. Rabbi Shmuel says rishus. If he thinks that his wife is acting improperly and he warned the wife of history and mishplaini, because I think you're having an affair with him, so then this is the din. But you're not mechuyev to warn your wife like that. And we pass like Rabbi Akiva that it's a mitzvah min haTorah. If he's suspicious that his wife is doing something improper, he has to warn her. You have to make the kinui. And the third pasuk is pasuk that says in connection with an Eved Kenani that an Eved Ivri has to be set free after 6 years when it comes to Yom Kippur Shel Yovel. Shem Yayin is only a din in Eved Kenani. Eved Ivri doesn't go free with Shem Yayin, but Eved Ivri goes free B'sheish or B'yovel. And if you buy an Eved Kenani, it says L'Olamehem Tavoidu. So Rabbi Shmuel says if you want to, you can keep him forever. You don't have to let him go free unless Shem Yayin, unless you knocked out the Shem Yayin at one of the Choftal Rosh Eivor. And Rabbi Kiva disagrees. Says no, the Olam Tavoy. There was a chayva hamashachar avdoi oiva be'esei. If a person sets free his Eved Kenani, he's in violation of this esei. So those are the three psukim where there's a machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva, whether it's rishus or chayva. The Gemara has a havamina there in Soita Dav Gimel Amud Aleph. Lema, should I say that the nekudas machlokes is in Kol HaTorah? Is there such a thing? Is it rishus? Maybe there's no such thing as a rishus. So if you have a pasuk, it has to be a chayva. That's there was a sefer that was written I think about the time of the Vilna Goyen in Vilna. The name of the sefer is Yisod V'Sharash Avoda. The author's name is, what's the name of the author?
Ziskin.
Rabbi Alexander Ziskin, correct, yeah. I think Harry Fischel was a descendant of Rabbi Alexander Ziskin, if I'm not mistaken. The descendants are known as Biraz, Beis Rei Shalav Zayin, B'nei Rebbeinu Alexander Ziskin. It's not such a popular sefer. He tells you how to be medaktik and this, how to say Kriya Shema, you should pause over here and pause over here, not to swallow up the letters, and always with chumras, always quote Zohars. He lived in a generation, everybody knew Shas Bavli Yerushalmi, so he doesn't have to quote any Gemara. See, they didn't all know Zohar, so that's why he's shaking on Zohars all the time. Okay. So he refers to this as Klola HaYofesh of Bal Chovis Alvavis. He quotes from the Chovis Alvavis the following notion, that in life there's never such a thing as a rishus. We usually assume that there are three areas of activity. There's some things you mechuyev to do. You have to lay tefillin, you have to say kriyishma, you got to daven, you have to eat matzah and mora, and so on. Then there's things that you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to eat mechal shabbos, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher food, and so on and so forth. And then there's rishus, most of it all day long. We do things. If you want to, you can get this job. If you want to, you can do that job. If you want, you can go take a walk. You want to go exercise. You want to sit and eat. You want to fast. Do whatever you want. So the Chovis HaLevavos says no such thing as rishus. That area that's called rishus, sometimes you're mechuyev to do it, and sometimes you're not allowed to do it. But it all depends on your circumstances. And the reason why it's called rishus is because it's not It's not always Iser, and it's not always Chayva. Sometimes it'll be a Chayva, and sometimes it'll be an Iser. Like, are you allowed to go, swimming? So if you need it for your good health, you're mechuyev to go swimming. If you don't need it for your good health, it's a waste of time, so it's usur to go swimming. You want to go on a boat ride. If you need it to relax, you're mechuyev to relax. I remember Balabas said, but if he was a very nervous person, extremely nervous. So he said, well, what do you mean? If I want to relax, I want to relax. You can't tell me I'm mechuyev to relax. Okay? He was a very nervous person. He just passed away. But that's what the Rabbi Alexander Ziskin and he said, Shabbat refers to this, Klal HaYofa Shabbal Chavis HaBomis. So the Gemara had a Havamina, maybe Lema, should I say, that this is the Nekudas Machlekes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, that according to Rabbi Shmuel, there is a concept of Rishus, and according to Rabbi Akiva, there ain't no such thing. There's never any Rishus. Everything is black and white. There's no gray area. Everything is either you're mechuyif to do it or you're not allowed to do it. There is a gray area, but that's the Machlekes. What does the gray area mean? Gray area means you're free to do or not to do, or it means it's sometimes black and it's sometimes white. That's why we call it gray, but it's not the, nothing is reshus in life. So then the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Nobody has to hold like that. Chavis al-Vav is the each case, by lo yitamam, by avral abruach kinim, each case, the machlokes how to read the psukim. A local machlokes, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that the three cases are linked up together with each other. Could be in each case it's local machlokes. There's no one klal. Anyway, so we pass an halacha like Rabbi Akiva that lo yitamei zochayva. A kohen gadol is not allowed to be mitamei only to a meis mitzvah, not allowed to be mitamei to design kohen. So here the Ramban HaChumash, without mentioning it, is quoting word for word from the Raibitz commentary on the Torah's Kohanim quite a few times. Ramban in his commentary on Chumash has word for word, he picked up things from the Raivit. Why doesn't he say that he's quoting the Raivit? It's a strong question. Maybe everybody knew. Maybe everybody in that generation, they all looked in the Raivit's Pirush. Everybody knew that he was quoting. I don't know. So he quotes Akasha, why did Akash Bohu instruct that Mishoel Beltzofon should take and should be metapel in the Kvura of Nadav Avihu, should have instructed Alos of Yisamar, other brothers, Lo Yitam Achayv, Aaron HaKoin was the kind God, he's not allowed to be Mitami L'meisim, even to design Kerevim, and it wasn't a Meis Mitzvah, but the brothers should have been Mechayv to be Mitami. How come the brothers were not Mitapal and Nikvur? So Ramban quotes the two answers that the Rabbi gives. So he gives one answer, perhaps it was a Hayra Shor, since it was the Yom Chanukas HaShmini L'Miluim, it's going to disrupt the Simchas HaShalmokam, such a celebration. So it was a Hirasha that they should not be metapel in the kvur. It's one suggestion. Then he gives another suggestion that is famous, that Rab Chaim picked up on that. The other suggestion is the Pasuk says that the Bnei Aharon should not be metami to the brother. Kishemen mishchas kodesh Hashem aleichem. What is that pasuk? I think that's how the pasuk says. So the Ravid suggests that a normal koyin hedyot l'doiros doesn't have mishicha b'shemen amishcha. Only the kohen gadol has mishicha. But here we were initiating kohuna by Aaron Abanov. When they were born, they were not Kohanim. So Aaron had Mashiach B'Shem and HaMishcha, and the children also. So even the children were not appointed as Kohen Gadol, but they had Kedushas Kohen Gadol, without Shem Kohen Gadol, without Amina. That's Rab Chaim's language. That's not the Rabbi's language. That's Rab Chaim's language. There may be the two aspects to a Kohen Gadol. There's one aspect for many generations until the end of the Bais Rishon period. Yoshio HaMelech was Goynes B'Shem and HaMishcha. That's a Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. That's quoted in the Gemara in Yuma. Mishnah says, Yoshua HaMelech was going as the Orem with the Luchas in the basement. So when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the end of the Bais Rishon period, the whole Bais Sheni period, there was no, supposed to be Zorek the Dam, Ala Kaparis, Lifnei Kaparis, there was no Kaparis, there was no Orem. So he's supposed to be Zorek the Dam in the location where the Orem was supposed to have been, where the Orem used to be. We say, Kitchelos Ilovai. The Mokum of the Orem, even though there was no Orem, retained the Kedusha, Kitchelos Ilovai, not just Bichlalusoi on the Beis HaMikdash, every spot retains its special status. Even though the Urim wasn't there, still the Kohen Gadol, after the Urim was placed in the basement and the whole Beis HaMikdash was still be Zorek the Dam in front of the Urim. So the so from that time on, how did they appoint a Kohen Gadol? So they had to have Merubah B'Gadim. They no longer had the Mashiach B'Shem and Amishcha. So when you appoint a Kohen Gadol, the Rambam quotes from the Tosefta that the Bezdin HaGadol has to appoint him. So you need a Minui, you give him a Shem Kohen Gadol, and then you have to give him Kedushas Kohen Gadol. So the Kedushas Kohen Gadol is accomplished for so many centuries, it was accomplished by doing Mashiach B'Shem and Amishcha. And then when they were going as the Mashiach, they were going as the Shem and Amishcha, then they endowed the Kohen Gadol with Kedushas Kohen Gadol by doing Merubah B'Gadim. So every a normal Kohen Gadol had both. They had a Shem Kohen Gadol with the Minui and had a Kedushas Kohen Gadol. Do we ever have a person who has Kedushas Kohen Gadol doesn't have a Shem Kohen Gadol? Yes, that's what that's Rab Chaim suggested. Pshat in the Ramban that you have Moshuach Melchama. The Moshuach Melchama generations later, and that these here, Elazar v'Yisam and Nadav Aviyah, they all needed Mashiach, Hashem and Amishcha, because they weren't born Kohanim, they weren't naturally born Kohanim. Usually when a person is appointed Kohen Gadol, he wasn't born a Kohen Gadol, he was born a Kohen, so when you make a Kohen Gadol, you have to do Mashiach. Here, no one was born a Kohen. So all five, Aaron and his four sons, all needed Mashiach. So the Doris, there is an institution of Moshuach Melchama, so you do Mashiach on him. So the Moshuach Melchama, the Gemara has, next to the last Perek in Yuma, a whole discussion which of the dinim of the Kohen Gadol apply to him and which dinim do not apply. Kohen Gadol has a whole bunch of different dinim. Like when the Kohen Gadol dies, so the Horig Bishkoga goes free from the Ori Mikla. So there's a machlokes hatanaim whether Moshiach Muhammad dies, is the Horig Bishkoga allowed to go home or not? Does he have a din Kohen Gadol then he get to that din? The Moshiach Muhammad does, when he does Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, he doesn't wear Shemayim B'Gadim. He only wears Abob B'Gadim. He's not allowed to be Metamei, even though he's not the Kohen Gadol, he's not allowed to be Metamei to the seven relatives. That then he has like a Kohen Gadol. Some then he has like a Kohen Gadol, some then he has like a Kohen Gadol. So that's Rab Chaim explained the Pshat in this institution of a Moshiach Muhammad. Not that there were three different kinds of Kohen. There's a Kohen Gadol, there's a Kohen Gadol, then there's a new animal that's a Kohen Moshiach Muhammad. No. There's a Kedushas, there's a Kohen. Then there's Kedushas Kohen Gadol, then the Shem Kohen Gadol, Minui Kohen Gadol. So the Moshiach Muhammad has the Kedushas Kohen Gadol because he did Mashiach, but he doesn't have the Minui. So that whatever dinim applied to the Moshiach Muhammad, the Dervis, those are the dinim that should apply to the Bnei Aharon. So that's the second suggestion that the Ravid gave that the Ramban quoted.
Would a Kohen Gadol Shavar have a Minui Kohen Gadol?
Yeah, Kohen Gadol Shavar just retired, but you don't fire him unless he did some nasty thing, you have to fire him. So the Kedusha he's still going to have. He'll still have the Kedusha's Kohen Gadol, but when you fire him, so this is in Yuma, Daf Yud Beis, quotes Yerushalmi, the Kohen Gadol is Mismana Bepeh, he can be Mistalik Bepeh. This is proofs from Mishnais like that. And then they quote Yerushalmi, says like that. There are Mishnais and Ksubas and in Hoirius that you can fire a Kohen Gadol. And he's no longer, not just if he retires, he's not functioning anymore, but he retains the Shem Kohen Gadol and the Kedushas Kohen Gadol. If you fire a Kohen Gadol, so he just retains the Kedushas Kohen Gadol, but he doesn't have the Shem Kohen Gadol. And Tesis is not sure. He's Mispana B'Peh, he can be Mistalik B'Peh. So who was Mimana him in the first place? The Tesis is not sure whether the Bezna Gadol or Echav HaKohanim. The Rama quotes at the Sefta that it's the Bezna Gadol appoints the Kohen Gadol.
So would the Parakel and Mashiach be a din in the Minoi or the Kedusha?
I don't remember. You got to look there in the Gemara, next to the last Perek, and it's a very tiny Perek. Next to the last Perek in Yuma. The Gemara lists off all prices. Which din of the Kohen Gadol applied to the Moshiach Muhammad, which not? This is how Rab Chaim answered the Kasha of the Orach Mishar. Orach Mishar is printed in the back of all the Gemaras on Nazir. It's a commentary by one of the Achrayim my master knows. It has a lot of Hagoyas, so there's a lot of misprints in Tosfos in Nazir, and then he has Chidushei Torah also. So there's a Mishnah where there's a Machlokes. Rav Lezer and the Chachamim. Let's say a Kohen Gadol and a Kohen Hedyar are walking down the road and they bump into a Meis Mitzvah, And you don't need both of them to be metame. You only need one or the other. So which one of them should be metame? So the Mishnah says, let the kain hadyet be metame. Whenever you have to violate an iser, let's say mishum pikuach nefesh, someone has to violate an iser. So the din is machila mosa hakal akal tchila. He tried to violate the lesser of the two evils, violate the lesser iser. So the kain gadol is machame. He's not even allowed to be metame to the seven relatives. The kain hadyet has less chame. He's allowed to be metame to the seven relatives. It happens to be a meis mitzvah here. So either is allowed to be metame, but the iser of the kain hadyet is the lesser of the two evils. So let the kain hadyet be metame. What if there's a nazir and a kain gadol walking down the road, and they both have exactly the same din? They're both not allowed to be metame even to the seven relatives, and they're both only permitted to be metame to the meis mitzvah. So which of the two of them is the lesser of the two evils? Which was the kal akal tchilo? So that's a machlokes Reb Lezer and the Chachamim. So I forgot who says which way. So one Tana says, if the nozer is metame, even beheter, if the nozer is going to be metame to the meis mitzvah, he'll have to bring korbanos. If the kohen is metame to a meis beheter, he doesn't have to bring any korbanos. So that's a clear proof that the iser of the nozer is machamer than the iser of the kohen gadol. The fact that he has to bring korbanos is a clear indication that his iser is machamer. Then the Gemara says, but on the other hand, the iser of the kohen gadol to be metame is machamer. So the Mishnah says the argument is why? Because zek dushas kedushas olam, zek kedushas kedushas shor. The nozer is only a nozer for 30 days, a month or two, however long he was mekabel on himself. Masheni keni kohen gadol, kohen gadol for the rest of his life. So that's the lashon of Mishnah. Shezek dushas kedushas olam, zek dushas kedushas shor. His din of kedushas nozer, kodesh yia, gadol peres arosha, the kedushas nozer is only of a temporary nature. So that's a machlokes Reb Lezer and the Chachamim. So the Orach Mishnah asked the Kasha, what do you mean the Nozer is only Kedusha Shor? What if he accepted upon himself a Nozer Ailam? So he's just the same as the Kohen Gadol. The Mishnah doesn't tell you that it's only by a Nozer who is Mekabel Naziris for a short period of time. There's such an institution as a Nozer Ailam. So you should be the same as the Kohen Gadol, and not according to that Hanan. So the Orach Misha answers, he doesn't think so, because the Nozer can always be Nishalam Nizirusa. Even if he accepts a Nizirusalam, he has the theoretical possibility of having Hataras Nadorim and undoing the whole net in Nizirus. So that's also called Kedusha Shor. So then the later Achranim ask, no, so you can fire the Kohen Gadol also theoretically, because Tosis quoted the Yerushalmi, and Mishnah is like that. There's such a thing as firing a Kohen Gadol. He's Mismana Vepeh, Mistalik Vepeh. So just like you have the ability to undo the net and the zeros by she'ela, so that's why even a nazir olam is called kedusha shor. So the kohen gadol also should be kedusha shor, because theoretically you can fire him. You have to have cause to fire him. So you have to have cause to be mataneda. You can't just be mataneda if you don't have a pesach or a harata. So that's the kasha. So that's where Rav Chaim suggested the teretz, that even if you mismana v'peh, mistalik v'peh, you can undo the minui of the kohen gadol, the shem kohen gadol, but the kedushas kohen gadol that he got either through Mashiach until the days of Yoshua HaMelech or through Merubah B'Gadim from that time on, the kedushas kohen gadol is never pakim b'chdi. He's going to remain a kohen gadol for the rest of his life. And the din of Tuma L'Mesim is one of the dinim of kohen gadol that does apply to the Mashiach Muhammad. That's a b'feirush Gemara. Mashiach Muhammad is not allowed to be metami to the seven relatives. Is din of kohen gadol. Why? Because he has kedushas kohen gadol. That's what the Ramban says. Maybe Elazar b'Issam had a din like a Mashiach Muhammad because they had Mashiach b'Shem and Amishcha. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik explained in his terminology, it means that Elazar b'Issam had kedushas kohen gadol even though they didn't have shem kohen gadol. Their father had minui, father had shem kohen gadol. And the children, Elazar b'Issam only had kedushas kohen gadol. But that's how Rabbi Chaim answered the kasha, that even if you fire the kohen gadol, but the kedushas kohen gadol he'll still have, and that's what asas to be metame l'meisim. If the nazir will be nishal nazirus, he'll be left with nothing. He won't be a nazir at all. So the nazirus is always called zek kedushas kedushas shor, but the kohen gadol is called kedushas olam. In the parsha, you have towards the end of the parsha, you have a lot of the dinim of tumah. Going to have more dinim in Tazriya Metzora. So the Chumash speaks about the four categories of things that are mekabel tumah: odem, mekela, mochlem, and mashkim. And the Gemara says, "Called the tikkun rabbanu kein deraisa tikkun." When the Chachamim building blocks of halachas, so when the Chachamim introduced dinim derabbanan, they wanted it to become a chelik of the Torah shebal peh. So they had to use building blocks that exist on the level of deraisa. So the Gemara says, when they instituted the isur of tiltal muktzah and Shabbos, so it was patterned along the lines of kabbalas tumah. Whatever is odem, mekela, mochlem, and mashkim is a davar chashuv. And that's mekabel tumah. Whatever doesn't fall into any one of these four categories, a piece of junk, so therefore it's not mekabel tumah. So they wanted to really prohibit handling anything on Shabbos. It's gzeirah shem ayotzi, the Gemara says. It's a Gemara in Beitzah, and it's a Gemara in Shabbos. The Raibit quotes it. The Rambam gives a whole explanation. What motivated the Chachamim to introduce the laws of muktzah? The Rambam gives a whole dissertation. The Raibit says, I don't know. And my Gemara doesn't say that. My Gemara says, gzeirah shem ayotzi. That's what it says in the Gemara. So they really wanted to aser handling anything in the house because he may forget and carry it outside. But if you're going to make aser everything, how can you hold your fork and knife? How can you eat your food? You can't take off your clothes and put on pajamas. Can't take off the pajamas, put on your clothes. You make life, you can't move a chair. You can't move a table. That's impossible. So whatever is junk, you don't really need it. So that's what they made in Issa. Don't handle it. It's a piece of junk, you don't need it any. Whatever has significance and you may want to use it, so that they never declared that as muktzah. Whatever is a piece of junk, they made a din of muktzah on it. So the Gemara says they patterned it a little bit after the dinim of Kabbalah Stam. It's not exactly the same. Let's say Kle Glolim, Kle Avonim, Kle Adoma on the Kabbalah Tumah period. But it's a Kli, so I said they're not going to declare it as muktzah. Let's say Urchlim and Mashkim is only Mekabel Tum if it's Michael Odom. The hay is not Michael Odom, so it's not Mekabel Tum. But Michael Behemah, you have to feed the horses, you have to feed the animals if you have a farm. So they declared all Urchlim and Mashkim, even though it's not Roy Lachilos Odom, it's not Mekabel Tum, all Urchlim and Mashkim are not considered muktzah. And same thing, Odom. Odom is only Mekabel Tum if he's a Jew. And Nochri is not Mekabel Tumah. The Gemara learns out there's a name of a parrot that's called Hakusim. Hakusim is the end of Maseches Nazir. And it starts off Hakusim Elohim Naziris, the institution of Naziris. A Nochri can be Magdish Karbonis. The Gemara learns that from Psukim, the Fairship Psukim. A Nochri can be Magdish Karbonis, bring Karbonis La Shamayim in the base Amigdash. But a Nochri cannot be Magdish himself as a Nazir. Even though it says Kodesh Yigal Peres HaRosho, Nazir cannot make himself as a Nochri cannot make himself as a Nazir. So that's the name of the Perek, Perek HaKusim. So in that Perek, there's a strange Taisus. Taisus says that just like a Nochri is not Mekabel Tumah, so an Ebekdaini is also not Mekabel Tumah. Rabbi Kivege writes on the side, it's not true. Rabbi Kivege quotes sources. The din is an Ebekdaini is Jewish. It's Chayv Mitzvah Keisha. Why is he not Mekabel Tumah? So let's say a Nochri is not Kabel Tumah, that is the din, but you're going to say some Nochri Mamukzah because they're junk. No. It's like Kle Glodim, Kle Abonim, Kle Adoma. Anam Kabel Tumah, period. But it's not junk, it is a Kli. When it gets to Maim Shuvim, it is a Kli. And when it gets to Maim Chaim Al Keli for Bilui Hamayim for Paraduma, it is a Kli. You can use a Kle Glodim, Kle Adoma. You can use that. In fact, they used to use it. They had a chumrah when they made paraduma, so they only used klei glolim, klei avonim, klei adoma, kelim that are just not mekabel tumah. So you see, it has a din kli. See, even though the Gemara Masechah Shabbos on the first half in kol kelim, so the Gemara says, kol the tikkun rabbanan kein deraisa tikkun, the institution of muktzah was patterned after the din deraisa of the fourth categories of things that are mekabel tumah, but not 100% the same. So then the Gemara has also other slight differences. It's not all of the dinim of Kalim and Hilchas Kabbalah Tuma. Let's say there's a Gemara Meruba that many may remember in Bava Kamma. If you remove the hide from an animal, so if you trim it and you make a blanket out of it, you make a leather blanket to use as a leather tablecloth, to use for a picnic in the park, to make a sheet to put on the ground, on the grass, to sit on top of the leather. So if you made it fancy, you prepared it for that, then it's Mekabel Tumah. But if you didn't designate it as such and you didn't put the final touches, even though it's roit to serve as a kli, so the din is that it's not makabatum, because the pasuk uses the expression, it has to be kli masa. You have to be miyachidit for a kli. So that din kli masa, not all the details of hilchas kabbalah stumma by the kelim, carry over to hilchas muktzah. You don't need all the din, but in principle, and basically, it's patterned after, in the general outline, it's patterned after the dinim of kabbalah stumma.
Since we see that there are differences, and regarding that also, like Rava says, Tum HaShad is Karamis.
Yeah.
So how do we know that it's altogether modeled after?
No, the Gemara says like that. That's patterned after the dinim of Kabbalah's Tumah. But it's not 100%. Not all the dinim of Tumah carry over. The four headings of Adam, Mekel, Machlan, and Mashlan, that carries over. And everything else not in those four categories is considered junk. And therefore it's muktzah. But those are the four basic categories. The details don't all carry over.
Well, I think you could say, let's say that it was useful, what people use, You can't say everything.
So
I'm saying, I guess, how do we know that it's right, based on
Tumah? The Gemara says that. That's the first daf in Kol HaKelim. The Gemara says that. They patterned it after Hilchas Tumah, but not 100%. Not all the way. The differences between the different Kelim, Klicheres, Elo Tarba Mikveh, so if a klicheres becomes tam, the only way to make a Torah is by smashing it. Once you smash it, so it can't retain the kedusha, can't retain the tumah. Then if you glue it back together again, you sew it back together again, so it'll be tohar. And the din of smashing the kli is not restricted only to klicheres, but klicheres, that's the only way you have to be metayer, it is by smashing. Shviras hakelim is metayer. Shviras hakelim is a concept in Kabbalah. But Shiris HaKelim over here is a simple concept. Nothing mystical about it. Just means if you smashed it, it's not a kli. It's not a kli, so it's not shach to retain the tumah. Even though it was tamah yesterday, but you smashed it today, so it's tamah. So the din of Shiris HaKelim applies even to kli matechas, even to kli eitz also, except that why should you want to smash it? Take it to the mikveh, be metayrit. But if you're in some kind of a rush, I need it today. So if you toivel something in a mikveh, then you have to have Hayar Shemesh. And before you have the Hayar Shemesh, the kli is still tam b'negiyah to Truma v'kachim. But if you're going to smash it, then there's no need for Hayar Shemesh. So if a person is greatly in need to use the kli today, he has a kli tummy, he has to use it today for Truma v'kachim, he can always smash it and glue it back together again. So the Gemara says Shlom Tzion HaMalka was once making a party. She was married to Yara HaMelech. He was a lunatic, he was crazy. And her brother, maybe she was also crazy for marrying him, I don't know. Her brother was Shimon Shetach, the chief rabbi. And Yara HaMelech killed all the rabbanim, the Gemara in the second parak, in the first half of the second parak in Sanhedrin. He killed all the rabbanim except for his brother-in-law, but his brother-in-law had to go in hiding because the lunatic may decide one day to kill him as well. So the Gemara says the wife was also a little screwy, so she wanted to make a party, and all the kelim were tamei. So instead of buying new kelim, so she had them smash every single kli and solder them back together again. So you didn't need Hayar Shemesh. Could have been an easier solution. No. So she was halachic. She was maybe she was a little crazy, but everything al pi halacha. They were crazy al pi halacha. Yeah. So that's what the Gemara said, that's what they instituted the Chumrim of the Rabbana of Tumah Yishana. If you have a Kli Mateches that became Tomei, and then you were Metairit by Shviras HaKli, and then you glue it back together again, so with the Rabbana you treat it as if it still has the Tumah. Because most people are not going to be able to do that shtick. Smash the Kli and then sew it back together again, so they're not going to do a good job of smashing it. So they made Xerah the Rabbanan that the Tumah comes back again. So again, so kli cheres is a kli that doesn't have tara ben mikveh. Then the Gemara has a klal towards the very end of Erevin. Gemara learns that from a pasuk called Davishen le tara ben mikveh ein anase av hatuma. Oichel mamashkim have no tara ben mikveh. And whenever the Gemara talks about hashoke, when you have water that's tamei, the din is hashoke is good. Whether the water is maim shuvim, you make hashoke, it's good. Or the water is tamei, you make hashoke, then the water becomes tahar. So whenever the Gemara talks about Maim Tameim and you do Hashoka, the water becomes Tahar, so Rashi always goes into this long dissertation. Rashi repeats it quite a few times in Shas, that Mayim, Ochlam and Mashkim have no Tahara v'mikveh, and Hashoka is a different din. It's not that the water that's Tomei, if you toivle the mikveh becomes Tahar. No, in principle, Ochlam and Mashkim have no Tahara v'mikveh. It's a din of Zriya. Let's say if you have an apple that's Tomei and you plant it in the ground and it takes root, so then the tumah disappears because it can't be a dava mechuba the karki, can't be tumah. So there's a pasuk in Navi that says Zareh amayim al panei chutzos. The Gemara beginning of Bava Kama quotes that pasuk. Zareh amayim al panei chutzos. So when you have mayim that's tumah and you pour it into a mikveh that has to be mechuba the karka, is considered as if you planted the water in the ground. It can't plant; it doesn't have any roots. But that's the biblical expression Zareh amayim. So zriya is metahir. So Rashi says not that it has tar b'mikveh, it's midin zriya. So this is an important din. Let's say someone dies in a room. So the mace is always referred to as avi avos hatumah. So anybody in the room becomes an av hatumah. But let's say there are kelim in the room, they also become an av hatumah. But if there's a klicheres ain't a nasa av hatumah, because kol dovash ain't a tar b'mikveh, ain't a nasa av hatumah. So the tumah goes down two madregas. The mace is avi avos, and the klicheres or the oichlam and mashkim in the room can't become an av hatumah because they also have no tar b'mikveh. So the tumah goes down two madregas from avi avos, transmitted to oichlam and mashkim and to the klicheres, it becomes a rishon the tumah. It doesn't become all the other kelim in the room, wooden kelim and metal kelim, will become av hatumah. And then if they'll touch oichlam and mashkim, they'll make them into a rishon the tumah. But if you have oichlam and mashkim in the room, or you have a klicheres in the room, so the tumah is transmitted from the mace, from the avi avos, tumah is transmitted to the echlam mashkim, to the klicheres. It becomes a rishon tumah. It doesn't become an av tumah. There is a machlokes achrayim. You look in the Tiferes Yisrael has a commentary on Mishnah. So he has an introduction to Maseches Kelim, all about tumah v'tar. So he points out there seems to be a machlokes achrayim regarding Klei Mateches. Are all Klei Mateches Mekabel Tumah? Are only the specific Mateches that are mentioned by the Chumash? Gold, silver, copper, iron, I already forgot what the others are. Lead or ferrous. Forgot the others. The Shaila is aluminum. Halacha Maase is aluminum. Aluminum is not one of the six in the Chumash. In the days of the Tanakh, until recently, they didn't have the ability to set aluminum was always mined together with iron. And they never knew that you can separate it. So in recent years, they separate aluminum from iron. So that's a big machlokes. He quotes, the Tiferes quotes, the Vilna Gaon holds that only these six are mekabel tumah. And aluminum and anything else, the Vilna Gaon, they have aluminum either. Any other mateches will not be mekabel tumah. He disagrees. And in recent years, they have, Moshe Feinstein thought, like the Vilna Gaon, but he doesn't quote the Vilna Gaon. I don't know why it's a secret. Tversa quotes the Vilna Gaon. Rav Moshe, Rav Yaki Kamenetsky, they also thought only the six metals that are mentioned in the Chumash have a Kabbalah Tumah, not a din that all metals have Tumah. What's a Kli Cheres and what's a Kli Adam? A Kli Adam is not a Kabbalah Tumah at all. Kli Cheres is a different. So the Gemara says, Kli Cheres is a Kli Adam which you bake in an oven. You bake it in a kiln. K-I-L-N, you bake it in a kiln. And Kli Adama, you just use Adama, and you make a Kli out of it. In Russia, they still have Kli Adama. In America, I don't think anybody has any Kli Adama. We have Kli Cheres, but not have Kli Adama. Kli Cheres are unusual. Number one, it's not Mekabel Tumah from the outside. Number two, is Mekabel Tumah Me'aviro. If you dangle a dead sheretz, the Shmona Shots Ma'amurim Batoira, so if you touch them, you become Tomei. So if you dangle the dead sheretz inside the Kli Cheres, it's Mekabel Tumah Me'aviro, even though it doesn't touch at all. On the outside, the Kli Cheres is not Mekabel Tumah at all, Me'atoira. On the inside, it's Mekabel Tumah Me'aviro. And then Ein Lo Tarib B'mikveh, and therefore Ein Anasa Av HaTumah. So the Kli Cheres has a whole different din. It's a whole different story. The Parsha has a difference between Ochlam and Mashkim. The Gemara says, Mashkim or Alulim le Kabel Tumah. Oichel Maronim Kabel Tuma, if Kiyuta Mayim Alzera, if they're rinsed off with water, Mayim, then the Gemara says there are Zayim Mashkin, Yad Shoch Adam is the Rosh HaTevet, the Zayim Mashkin, they have the din of Mayim, Benegir, to be Machshir Oichel Makabel Tuma. So let's say you have an apple, so the apple was growing on a tree, so it rained on it and everything. The rain was not Machshir, the apple, a Kabel Tuma, because just like a Dova Mechubel Karka, it's not Makabel Tuma, so it's not Makabel Hechshir either. You have to detach the apple from the tree, you detach the wheat from the ground. Once it's tolush min akarka, then you rinse it off with water. And so then it's hukshel lekabel tumah. And mashkim don't need hekshel lekabel tumah. Mashkim, the Gemara's lashon is mashkim alulim lekabel tumah. They're more susceptible to kabbalah's tumah. Mashkim am lekabel tumah, even if it didn't have any hekshel. That's a machlok, is the Rambam and the Raiva. The Rambam says only the Zayin Hilchas Tumas Oichel. The Rambam thinks only the Zayin Mashkim Adinam Ke Mashkim. And the Raiva says, Basepis, orange juice is also a mashke. Anything that's a beverage is a mashke. The Raiva thinks that's not true. The special din of Zayin Mashkim is that the Zayin Mashkim are Machsha Oichel Mil Kabel Tumah. But it's not that the other things are not Mashkim. Whatever it's Zvoy Lishti Asodam has the din of Mashkim. Then the Torah has all the dinim of determining whether any given animal is kosher or treif. So the Torah has, in fish, you have to have snapper the kaskesis. That determines that it's kosher. You have to have a tradition. So the Achronim quoted Tshuva by the Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Harosh, the small sefer. Tshuva's Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Harosh, the brother of the Tur, who says that you don't need any masorah on the fish. There are tens of thousands of fish. It's not shy to have a masorah on fish. All the different kinds. All you need is snapper v'kaskes. A big machloikis, what if the sea animal has snapper v'kaskes and also has arms and legs? It doesn't look like the shape of a fish. It's not at all the shape of a fish. So in the days of the Balei HaTosfot, there was a big dispute regarding barbuta. What exactly is barbuta? Taisus and Avodah Zarah, with the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, that Lamates. Lamates, Lamates, how do you determine any given fish is kosher or treif? So the Taisus talks about the Barbuta, and then the Smak also talks about it, that he had a dream. One of the Rabbonim allowed the eating of the Barbuta, and then he had a dream that he's giving chazer to the public to eat, and he realized he passed wrong, and he woke up in the morning and told everybody shouldn't eat the barbuta. What exactly is the story with the barbuta? So on the Hagoras HaSmak, Rabbeinu Peretz wrote Hagoras HaSmak, so the Beis Yosef quotes this. Rabbeinu Peretz writes in the Hagoras HaSmak on the bottom of the page, barbuta is, we eat it all the time. It's sole. How do you spell sole? S-O-L-E. Soulfish. That the tail doesn't have an indentation. Instead of being V-shaped on the tail, it's straight. So half of the Balei HaTosfot is held, it has to look like a fish, and a fish has to have a point at the nose or the mouth, whatever, over here, and then it has to have an indentation on the tail. And if the tail is straight, you're not allowed to eat it. We do it all the time. We eat that all the time. By us, no one ever raised an issue. So we don't follow that. But the Shaila is the Aruch HaShulchan and others raise the Shaila. What? That looks like a fish. What if it clearly doesn't look like a fish? It's a sea animal. It's a mermaid or something. And it happens to have snapper v'kaskesis also. It has legs and arms and everything, a head and a nose and ears, and it has snapper v'kaskesis. Is that also mutter? So I think most of the person heard that. That's also mutter. Snapper v'kaskesis. Anything that swims that has snapper v'kaskesis is mutter, even if it's not at all in the shape of a fish. I think that's the accepted opinion. The Torah prohibits worms, but if it's a fish with snapper v'kaskes, then it's mutter. If you have fish without snapper v'kaskes, that's sheretz hamayim, that you're not allowed to eat. How do you determine whether any given animal, behemah v'chayah, is kosher or treif? So the Chumash says, malager mafiz parsa. Malager mafiz parsa is kosher. Do you need a masoro to know that this is kosher? Why should you need a masor? It's clear. It's malager, mafis, parsa, is mutter. Maybe you have to, maybe it's only a certain kind of malager, maybe it's only a certain kind of mafis, parsa. It's a little unclear. So there's a shach in Yeridaya where the shach writes, It's important to know whether any given animal is a behema or a chaya, because chelav of a chaya is mutter, and chelav of a behema is an isa karis, the exact same chelav, the same location. In a behema it's aser with an isa karis, and a chaya it's mutter. And there are other differences also. Oisav es beno only applies to a behema, doesn't apply to a chaya. Matnas zorah l'chayayim v'hakeva, when you shech behema schulen, in Shech Tebeim, you have to give Zuala Chayim HaKeva, that's called Matonis. The three are called Matnas. They're in Chav Dal and Matnas Kunis. Zuala Chayim is called Matonis. So if you Shech Techayi, you don't have to. Kisei Adam is only Chayim. Chayim V'yof Behem doesn't need Kisei Adam. So there's several differences between Behem and Chayim. So the Gemara says in Eletrefes, how do you determine whether any given animal is Behem or Chayim? By the shape of the horns, how they curl up. So that's not so easily identifiable. So the Shach writes a chumra that he says that the minig is that you don't eat the chelev of an animal on the assumption that it's a chaya based on the shape of the horns, because it's not so easy to know what the correct shape of the horns is. You have to have a masora from earlier generations that this is a chaya. If you don't have a masora, you don't eat the chelev. So you look in the Chochmas Sodom, the Shach lived in Vilna. He had to run away with the hand of Chmelnitsky riots in Tachvatat. Tachvatat was when? 1648, 1649. So he had to run away. The Chacham Tzvi ran away. Chalkas Mechoike, a whole group of Goyim Adirim lived there at that time. So the Chacham Sodom also was a businessman. He lived in Vilna. Years later, he lived the same time as Vilna Gaon. He was a Mechutan of Vilna Gaon. He lived 100 years later. So he quotes the Shach as saying that you can never eat any given animal based on this determining that it has malagerim after his parsa unless you have a masora. So others point out that's not really what the Shach said. But the Chochmas Adam claims that that's the minig in Vilna. So there was an issue in the beginning, early years after Hakamas HaMedina, about a certain animal that has malagerim after his parsa, but also has humps on its back like a camel. It's called a zebu. They got it from India. They have it in the South America a lot. They have South America, they have. So we never had a masora on the zebu, but it's kemat the same. It's very similar to a cow, but it has certain differences. So one of the differences is that it can last longer in a dry climate without drinking so much water. So in Eretz Yisrael, in the early years after Hakamas HaMedina, so they wanted to import a lot of zebus for the milk industry, and the cows have to drink a lot of milk. Camels don't have to drink so much water. The camels drink water and they keep it in their body for a couple of days. They don't have to have water kaseda. Cows have to have water kaseda. So the zebu gives off milk like a cow. It's kosher animal. Has malagerim after his parsa. And it doesn't have to drink water so much. In that sense, it's like a camel. So that's why there was an interest in introducing the zebu in Eretz Yisrael. So the Chazon Ish corresponded at that time with Rav Herzog, and he said it's not a smart idea because he was a Litvak. Chazon Ish was a Litvak, and said all the Litvaks follow the Minhagim of Vilna. They all follow the Chayyad and the Chachmas Adam like the Bible. So the Chachmas Adam says that that was the minig in Vilna. You don't eat any given animal unless you have a masora, that it's a kosher animal. You shouldn't rely on your own determination that it's malagerim afis parasa. Why not? Because he may make a mistake. In fact, the Tmima raises an issue about a certain animal, the Shesua. It's not in this week's Sefer, it's later. He raises an issue that he read in a book about animal zoology, that there is an animal in the African jungles that has a split, that has two spines, shnei gabin and shnei shedroys, and it survives. And the Gemara Tzemachleik is Rabbi Shmuel, whether such an animal can survive. And because the Rishonim didn't know how to paskin, so the Shulchan Aruch goes l'chumer on the assumption that such an animal cannot survive. So when the Pasuk talks about Shesua, an animal that has shnei gabin and shnei shedroys, must be talking about Shesua ben Pekua, that we ask Shesua ben Pekua. So the Torah Tmima says maybe we should reconsider that psak in the Shulchan Aruch. Maybe we should allow Shesua ben Pekua, because now that we realize that such an animal does exist, so the Gemara says it goes on that animal. But if it's a ben pekur, then it will be mutter. So it's interesting. This was a mistake. The Torah Tumim was written in the early 1900s. This was a mistake that was going on for 100 years. Over 100 years, the people in zoology thought that animal was malager mafris parsa. And then about 15 years ago, every couple of years they have an international convention. So around 15 years ago or so, they came to the realization it's not malager. Malager means it keeps on chewing on food. They came to the realization they made a mistake. For over 100 years, they made a mistake that animal is not malager. They would have eaten the animal. So that was the chumrah that the Chochmah Sodom understood from the Shach. You don't eat an animal just because you decided that it's malager, mafis parse. You may have made a mistake. It may be that you made a mistake what the malager is. There's some baby doctor who lives in Mexico City, I think, who put out a book. He wants to say malager is very restricted because they're bothered with kasha. The Chumash gives you animals that are malager and not mafis parse. Animals that are mafis parsa are not malager. And the Gemara said, these are the only animals in the whole wide world. So that's a proof that Torah ben Hashemayim. How did Moshe Rabbeinu know all the animals in the world? He didn't know. He didn't visit all the countries. So it's a right that the Chumash was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Ribbono Shel Olam, who created the world, knows that these are the only animals that have one without the other. So they ask now that it's not true, that there are certain animals that are malager, not mafis parsa, and they're not mentioned in the Chumash. So this doctor published the whole book to explain that the Gemara is right, that the people make a mistake, what's malager. He gives you a very restricted, a very limited definition of what's called malager. He says, these animals that I mentioned, the Chumash, they have that property of malager, and the others don't have that property. Okay. The Chumash never gives you the simonim to determine whether any given bird is kosher. The Chumash just gives you a list of the non-kosher birds. The Mishnah and Eilu Treifas tell you what are the simonim to tell. Then there's the famous sugya of Nesher. Nesher is an eagle. Tosfos says Nesher is not an eagle. Rabbi Natan says Nesher is not an eagle. Okay, but there's a long balamor over there. Balamor quotes his Rebbe. Very long, famous sugya of Nesher. Years ago in yeshivas, they didn't learn in Lithuanian yeshivas in the 1900s between the First World War and the Second World War. They only learned Noshim and Ezekiel. They only learned these seven Masechtas, Baba Kamba, Baba Masir, Baba Basra, and Ksubis and Yavamas, and Gitme Kedushim. That's all, only the seven Masechtas. But in Hungary and other countries before the Litvish Yeshivas, they learned Chulin, they learned Brachas, they learned Shabbos, they learned Erevin, they learned everything. So they used to learn Chulin. So that was famous. The Sugi of Nasher was a complicated Sugi, and they learned the Balamor there. So in Shulchan Aruch, they tell you all the Simonim. How do you determine whether any given bird is kosher or treif? So they give you the simonim, kurkabana niklaf, and so on, how the toes are shaped. So the Gemara tells a story in Eilu Treifas that the Amoraim came upon a new bird that they never saw before, and they established that it's a kosher bird, and they were eating it based on the simonim. And then, after a couple of weeks, they realized that they're eating a non-kosher bird, that it doesn't have all the simonim. Not so easy to determine all of these simonim. So Rashi goes out of his way there. Rashi usually just translates the words. Rashi doesn't give you psak halacha. The Rashi writes on that Gemara, you see the Amorai made a mistake relying on the simonim of the oif tohar. What's an oif tohar? What's an oif tameh? So we shouldn't rely on our chachma either. You should only eat a bird if you have a masar. Because the Amorai fell in, we can also fall in. So this is quoted by the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch. The Sfarim don't have such a chumrah. B'chaba quotes the Mishnah in the Gemara. If you have all the four or five simonim, machlekes or rishayim, how many simonim you need, then you establish that the bird is kosher. And the Ramah says, Ramah quotes the Yisa V'Heta by the Rabbeinu Yoina Ashkenazi. There were two Rabbeinu Yoinas. There was Rabbeinu Yoina Girundi. He was a mechutin of the Ramban. Rabbeinu Yoina HaChosid, he wrote the commentary on Pirkei Avos, and his Talmid Rabbeinu Yoina wrote on Maseches Brachos and the Shari Tshuva and so on. That's Rabbeinu Yoina HaSfardi. Then Rabbeinu Yoina Ashkenazi, who wrote the Yisa V'Heta HaAruch, he doesn't quote any Sfardim at all. He only quotes Rashi and all the Balei HaTosfos that we never heard of. But it's all Balei HaTosfos, no Sfardim over there at all. They made a mistake on the first page, on the title page. They write Rabbeinu Yoina Girundi. They thought it's only one Rabbeinu Yoina. More than one person with the name Yoina. So the Ramah quotes this from the Issa the Heter of the Rabbeinu Yoina that you shouldn't eat any bird unless you have a Masar in the discussion. So that was the issue with the turkey. When Columbus came back from America, he brought back the turkey to Spain. So the Jews in Spain, Columbus was Jewish, and the Jews in Spain were Sephardim. They weren't Ashkenazim. So they followed the Siman. So the turkey has all the Simanim of a kosher bird, so you can eat it. And then 50 years later, the Ashkenazim looked, hey, they're eating turkey. Must have had a Masorah. The turkey is kosher. They never had a Masorah. It was brought back from America. They never had it in Europe before Columbus brought it back. So everybody started eating turkey. And then years later, they woke up and they realized that the turkey came in through the back door over here. Ashkenazim shouldn't be eating turkey. So there was a whole to-do about that. So the Rabbi David Horowitz, who's a Rebbe here in Yeshiva, is a descendant from the Shalos family. Shalos family name is Horowitz. So he says that in his family, on the side of the Aridea, they write that the descendants from the Shalos don't eat turkey. He says there are people in his family that eat Chazer on Yom Kippur, but turkey they won't eat. That's the tradition. They don't eat turkey. They don't know why. Why is simple? Why? Because we're choshish for this Rashi and the Ramah quotes Yisavet. You only eat a bird if you have a masar, because you may be making a mistake. And most other people do eat turkey. They say that, so they give all kinds of terutz and what they say. The Indians in America were the lost 10 tribes and had a masar that the turkey was kosher. The Indians didn't have, they're not from the Lost and Tribe. They never had a masara that the turkey is kosher.
Was that seriously?
One of the Achrayim writes like that, yeah. There's a whole book, some professor in Eretz Yisrael on zoology wrote a whole book on turkey. And he quotes all the different Achrayim who talk about it. But they quote that at one time people were complaining why the Jews are eating turkey, and the Baal Shem Tov thought that it's not right to be Malamed Chayv on Klal Yisrael. So he said, stop hacking already, the turkey is kosher. Shine. So that's why the Hasidim eat turkey, because the Baal Shem Tov said we should stop tumbling about the turkey. It shouldn't be Malamed Chayv on the Jewish people. But it's really an issue. In fish, there's an issue. A lot of fish have worms in them. So worms you're not allowed to eat. Fish you're allowed to eat, worms you're not allowed to eat. So what's the story? Herring always has worms. So in the Kitzur, Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to eat worms, except the worms and the herring, those are kosher. Why are the worms and the herring kosher and every other worm is not kosher? So the Gemara says, if the worm is found in the stomach of the fish, obviously it came from outside, the fish swallowed it, went in the mouth and went into the stomach, so that came from the outside. But if the worm is found in the flesh, then it's okay, because the fish turned into a worm. The fish turned into a worm. So we know that it's not so. The fish doesn't turn into a worm. All the worms come from outside. So what's the Gemara talking about? So there's every so often we quote from the Dor Revi'i. Dor Revi'i was the first great-grandson of the Chassam Sofer, who was named Moshe. He was given the name of the Chassam Sofer. Dor Revi'i is a Sefer Anchulin, a very good Sefer Anchulin. So he has a hakdama to his sefer, which is really hakdama to all of Torah Shabbat Peh. Very nice, worth reading. One of the rabbis many years ago published the whole Dvar Torah and the Beis Yitzchok, which was really an elaboration on the hakdama of the Dor Revi'i to his sefer Anchulin. Dor Revi'i was just reprinted recently. He was a colorful person. He was a rabbi in Kloisenberg. He wasn't a Kloisenberger rabbi. He was a Kloisenberger rabbi. And he gave up his rabbanis to move to Eretz Yisrael. He was a Zionist. Before Hakamas HaMedina, way before, in the early 1900s, before Hakamas HaMedina. That's how the Satmar Rebbe says he would not be Kervis. He was a Zionist. By definition, he has to be in the Kervis. But he has a very nice sefer. So he talks about this issue and other issues. But the Gemara talks about spontaneous generation. The Rambam talks about spontaneous generation. The Psukim talk about different shrotzim. So the Gemara says in Psochim, the Gemara in Makkah says, "Ochel putis aloka arba nemala loke chamesh tzira loke shesh." If you eat an ant, nemala, you get five times malchus. Why do you get five times malchus? So Rashi and Tosfos and the Gaonim and the Ramban, everybody gives the same style of a pshat. You add up how many times it says in the Chumash that you're not allowed to eat a sheretz. So if it says six times, then you get six times malchus. The Rambam is the one who disagrees. The Rambam made a big The Rambam wrote the Sefer HaMitzvos, and he has the 14 Sharoshim, the 14 Klolim, the 14 guiding principles that determine whether any given mitzvah belongs in the Sefer HaMitzvah or not. So several of the Sharoshim are more famous than the others. One of the more famous ones is Shorash Tes. In Shorash Tes, he talks about Kefal Alav. If you have the same pasuk written six times, you don't give six times Malkus. You don't count it six times in the Minyan HaMitzvahs. It's just repeated for emphasis. The Gemara says, if you don't wear tefillin, you're mevatel four mitzvahs, because it says in four times. In Parshas Kadesh, Ekeviach, Shema, Yom Shema, says in all four Parshios, you should wear tefillin, Shal Yad, tefillin, Shal Rosh. The Rambam said, there's one mitzvah in Shal Yad, one mitzvah in Shal Rosh, but it's not four mitzvahs on Shal Yad, four mitzvahs on Shal Rosh. The Gemara says, you're mevatel four mitzvahs on Shal Yad and four mitzvahs on Shal Rosh. He said, that's a guzma. The Gemara means that it's repeated for emphasis. But if something is a kefal ha-mitzvah, a kefal ha-lav, you only count it once. How does he read the Gemara? The Gemara says, Ochel patisa loka arba, nemala loka chamish, tzira loka shesh. If you eat a certain fish, you get four times malchus. If you eat an ant, you get five times malchus. And Rashi Tosfos and the Ramban and the Goyim, they all say that's the pshat. You add up how many times the pasuk says. The Rambam says, no, there is no such thing. There's a din sheretz hamayim is olav. There's a din if it swims, and it doesn't have snap of the kaskas. There's a din sheretz oritz if it's a worm, which is not malager mafis paras obviously. So that's a sheretz oritz. You're not allowed to give. That's a din of sheretz oof if it flies. What if it swims and it flies and it dances and it plays a guitar and it's spontaneously generated? So he said there's a olav spontaneously generated sheretz hamayim sheretz oof sheretz oritz. So if it has all of these together, then you look at it. So that's what the Raivid is massing on the Rambam. He makes fun of the Rambam. He calls him Hama'asef, the collector. He says, Hama'asef hazeh osam dvarim she'enam. The Rambam collected animals that don't exist. He said, there is no such animal that it swims and it flies and it walks on the dry land and it's spontaneously generated also. So that's a machlekes is the Rambam and the Raivid. The Rambam has his unique sheet. So then the Rambam writes in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, unless anybody is going to tell me that there's no such thing as spontaneous generation, he says, you don't know the ABC of science. Of course there's such a thing as spontaneous generation. And the Torah has a special love on eating the shvatzim that are spontaneously generated. So that's where the Dor Revi'i picks up on that topic. When Louis Pasteur proved that there's such, no such thing as spontaneous generation, so that was a shaila. There's an Italian Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Yitzchak Lamprenti, who wrote an encyclopedia. It's called Pachad Yitzchak. I remember when we toured Italy, his descendants, his great-great-grandchildren, were singing piyutim for us. Their name is Lamprenti. And they have different, they have their own piyutim in Italy and they have their own igunim in Italy. Everything is different. They told us we were touring Italy in the 9 days, and they said they're going to have a concert for us. So we didn't know how we're going to get around this, how we're going to break the news to them that we can't have a concert in the 9 days. Turned out it wasn't a concert with music. They were singing their piyutim, so they called that a concert. Okay. So Rabbi Yitzchak Lamprenti is the first one in writing who raised the issue. He says that Louis Pasteur just proved no such thing as spontaneous generation. So what do you do with the Dinim and the Gemara that are based on the assumption that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation? Should we throw out the Gemara? Should we throw out the science? Or should we reinterpret the Gemara? Whatever. So that was a whole pilpul. So the Dor Revi'i has an unusual opinion. I don't think it makes any sense. He says if when the Chachamim said the Din, this was assumed to be scientifically correct, even if it's proven to be incorrect in later generation. So then you leave the din in its place. But if at the time that the Chachamim said the din, at that time it was known to be incorrect, so then you have to throw out the din because they made a mistake. What's the difference whether in their generation it was known as a mistake or not? I don't see why it should make a difference. Anyway, so that's the issue with the worms. The Prima Godim quotes the Beis Yosef. For those who don't bother to learn Beis Yosef, the Prima Godim quotes the Beis Yosef. It says, if you find the worms in the stomach of the fish, they're awesome misofik. Why is it awesome misofik? The worms clearly came from outside. You found it in the stomach of the fish. So the answer, Alpipash, this is, all the worms come from outside. None of the worms, the fish, the flesh of the fish doesn't switch to become a worm. Fish is a fish and worm is a worm. They're two different things. But if the worm, the different kinds of worms, so if the nature of the worm is such that it can penetrate the walls of the stomach and move into the flesh, So such a worm blends in to become part of the fish. So that's why the Beis Yosef quotes Arishana says, if you find the worms in the stomach, they're only sofek. Maybe they could have, if you would have not pulled the fish out from the river, maybe these worms would have been able to penetrate the membrane around the stomach and moved in into the flesh. So even before they penetrate the membrane, such a worm blends in. When a fish swallows worms, those worms blend in to be part of the fish. So that the minig always was that the Jews ate herring, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says the worms in the herring are mutter. Everybody knows that worms in the herring are mutter. Why they mutter? Because those worms have penetrated through and through. You don't eat the stomach of the herring, you eat the flesh. So the worms clearly came from outside, but they went through and through the membrane of the stomach and went into the flesh. So that's what we assume. The worms that penetrate into the flesh are mutter.
Let's say any animal that eats something is not kosher and it's in the stomach. So we can't
if a kosher animal eats non-kosher food,
yeah,
and I checked the kosher animal and I found the non-kosher food in the stomach, so the non-kosher food remains a non-kosher. Let's say a kosher animal takes the milk, drinks the milk from a non-kosher animal, then I checked the kosher animal, I find all the milk, so the milk is going to be treif. It doesn't become kosher just because it's in the stomach. Sometimes it'll become kosher because the acids in the stomach will work on the food, and that'll be called ikul. Ikul means it's digested, considered digested. Nifsal me'achila. Then it's called pirsha bi'alma. It's not void l'achila. So the Gemara has a whole discussion of machlokes in Yerideya about the cholov shebekeva, the milk inside the belly. If you shech the kef and it just nursed from the mother, is the milk milchik or is it parve? Is it treif? If it came from a pig, would the milk be treif or would it be kosher? Would it be parve? So that's a discussion. Maybe there's a difference between chalav korish and chalav tzolul. If it hardened, means that the enzymes in the stomach worked on it till it converted to become hard. So then it's pirsha b'alma. And if it's chalav tzolul, maybe then the enzymes didn't have a chance to work on it yet. But they're different opinions. Three different opinions. That the cholov is always michael, the cholov even tzolov is not michael, or you should distinguish between tzolov and korosh.
Back to the scientific shadow, I've seen people say also like shinar teva, the nature change from the time of the Gemara to now. Does Rebbe think that's a legitimate claim to say that the teva has changed? Or?
Some things we know changed, some things we know. Scientists themselves will also say something changed.
I mean, how do we know if something blends into the animal? Let's say we took the example of eating bugs in vegetables. So why there does it not blend in, but by fish it does blend in?
I don't know. They must have had a tradition that by fish is mutter. The worms that succeed in piercing through the stomach membrane, it goes into the flesh of the fish. So the Gemara assumes
why
that those ones
just,
are coming.
It's not more established to assume that they just spontaneously generated in the fish?
Maybe they did, but in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they ate those fish.
They ate herring in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. They ate herring in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Moshe Rabbeinu didn't eat herring. I don't know, yeah.
I'm just wondering, what's this shear of, let's say, a sharetz or... If you have certain bugs which are not observable by the eye, versus there are some which are very small, like you have a light box or something.
Yeah, they're always microorganisms. If I go like this, I'm swallowing down my base ablia, I'm swallowing a million microorganisms. So whatever is microscopic is not visible to the naked eye. Obviously, the Torah didn't speak about that. The same thing, Rav Moshe has a tshuva, ribua ha-tfilin. The tfilin have to be square. Ribua ha-tfilin means to the naked eye. You don't have to be so precise. I remember once there was a dentist was davening shacharis in Broye the Shul one day, and he brings me over his shalrosh and he asks me, is it ravua? So I took out a piece of paper from my pocket and I measured how long the tefillin shalrosh are over here, and I measured the other side. I said, yeah, it's ravua. So he tells me he knows it's not ravua. He does fillings in cavities, and he deals with such tiny things that his eye is so adept seeing these things, when he looks at his tefillin shel rosh, it rubs him the wrong way. He knows for sure that it's not ravua. But to the naked eye, to the normal person, he has a unique eye, because that's what he does for a living. He fills cavities. But the normal person, that's called ravua. So the din is, it depends on the normal eye, doesn't it? If a guy's half blind, then he can't see the bugs in the soup. So you don't say whatever, you can't close your eyes and say whatever you don't see is mutter. If the eyes are visible to the naked eye of a normal person.
I feel like half the lettuce, though, half the bugs are not seen.
A lot of the bugs are not visible, but a lot of the bugs are visible. A lot of time you can see a black spot, and you don't see if it has any legs. You don't know whether it's stam, a piece of dirt, or it's a bug. But sometimes, I remember one of the rabbanim in the OU, I used to make fun when they started this whole thing with the bugs. I thought the whole thing was an exaggeration. So one of the rabbanim brought in a leafy vegetable, and he asked me, does it have any bugs on it? So I was looking. I said, there are no bugs. So the guy takes the piece of leafy vegetable, puts it on his hand, and because of the body temperature, the black spot started to move. Calls mom that it was on the table, and we were holding it like this. The black spot didn't move, but the bug was still alive. So Rashi and Tosfos write in Erevin, in the Chavs, why it's called Sheretz. It's visible, Sheretz. When it starts running, then you can see it. So that's considered visible to the naked eye. Even though you can't see the legs and you can't see the eyes unless you use a magnifying glass, but if you see it walking, that's called visible to the naked eye. So let's say there's water, and you know that the water has bugs in it. If you take, someone brought some water from the New York reservoir over here to the yeshiva, quite a few, around 10 years ago when they started the whole story with the bugs in the water in New York. So he brought a bucket of water from the reservoir, and you look in the bucket of water, you can see these worms swimming around. It looks like fish in a fish tank. You can't see the bugs themselves, the worms themselves, because they're translucent. So you just see water. But you see splashing, back and forth splashing, much like in a fish tank. And it's not that the wind was blowing. The wind doesn't blow so much outside. The wind was blowing a little bit, but it's not shaykh that it was much like fish in a fish tank. So that's considered sherutz, that is visible. We don't see these bugs because by the time the water comes from the reservoir to our faucet, so the water is rushing at a great speed in the pipes, and all the bugs bang against the end of the pipe, so they all get killed. So by the time we get the bugs, they're not visible anymore. But in the reservoir, they were visible. So the Dark and Shuvah quotes Machranim. That's what the Mamshik writes in the Tshuva. Every body of water in the world had these kind of bugs in it, these copepods. The only question is it a mir tamotze, is it a mir shena motze? So usually it's a mir shena motze. So the Mamshik writes, if in your community it's a mir tamotze, then you have to filter the water, okay? Then you're not allowed to drink it. So the shaila is, if I know in my community you take water from the reservoir and you see them swimming around like fish in the fish tank, so then I'm going to take a bucket of water, I'm going to cook it, I'm going to kill all the bugs, and now they're not going to be swimming around anymore. So the Dr. Chuba quotes Achanim, that doesn't help. If when you took the bucket of water, you saw them swimming around, that's Nikola Ayin, that's Nirola Ayin. It is visible to the naked eye. And then you cook it, or like by us, the water by the time it comes from the reservoir to our faucet, all the bugs were killed because they were shooting with great speed against the pipes under the ground, so then they killed all the bugs. But we knew that when you look at the water in the reservoir, they are visible to the naked eye. So the Pashto says that they should be also. All the dinim in the Torah depend on visibility to the naked eye. Same thing that Moshe Feinstein says about colors. Maradam, if a woman has a kesem, you want to know whether it has a maratami, maratohar. So he says, you don't have to use a magnifying glass. You look at the mara, does it have a mara, is it notalad mumis, then it's tummy. And if it's not notalad mumis, you're not mukhif to use a magnifying glass to see, maybe it is, maybe it'll be notalad mumis if you look at it over there. Well, the halachas depend on, but you have to have good sight. If a guy's half blind, so it doesn't help. He has to be able to, if a person is colorblind, it doesn't help. He has to be able to see colors.
The bugs in the water in New York, the miramata and miramata.
That's questionable. That's exactly the shot. Is it a mir hamatzah, mir shena matzah? Here in the neighborhood, they say it's one out of every 8 cups of water will have one of these bugs.
Okay.
but it's not always the case. It depends in the evening when a lot of people are showering, in the middle of the day when people are not using water. One side of the street there'll be a mi'ata matzi, the other side there'll be a mi'achena matzi. So that's the question, is that called a mi'ata matzi because certain times of the day, but the other times of the day it's not? That's a question of definition. And what percentage do you have to have that it should be called mi'ata matzi? So the Mishkan is Yankov said, the Pisca, the Darkei Tshuva quotes, Mishkan is Yankov says 10% or above is called mi'ata matzi. But below 10% is called mi'achena matzi. So let's say you buy a suit that you have to check for shatnas. So the same shaila, if it's a mi'ata matzi, you have to check. If it's mi'achena matzi, you're not even mechuyev to check. Menatar you go, basar rav, even mi'ata matzi. The whole thing is a chumra mid'rabban, and the Ramban says, but it's a mi'ata matzi. Ramban says, Ramban is one who says, we only check for sirchas on the lungs. We don't check for the 70 trefas, the 70 different, 7-ohm. We don't check for the others. The others are mi'achena matzi. But the sirchas on the lungs are mi'ata matzi. So what is taka? What is the percentage of animal that you shech that have a sirch on the lung? So Rav Soloveitchik said in America he used to be mekel. He said he used to be mekel everything on the books plus more. He had more kudas when he used to give a hashgacha on a slaughterhouse in Boston. He used to be mekel. The Balatanya has certain kudas. They used to be mekel all the kudas on the books plus more. And he says in his slaughterhouse they used to have 14% of sirchas on the lungs. He says, and then they had the glatt kosher, where they claimed they only had 9%. He said, how is that possible? Mine is not glatt kosher, we have 14%. He says, glatt kosher is glatt treif. It can't be lying. That was 70 years ago, 80 years ago, 90 years ago. I don't know when it was, a long time ago. He was upset about that. And Rabbi Yashiv said that in Eretz Yisrael, the percentage of sirchas on the lungs on the animals for many years is not 10%. He says it's 7.5%. So he thought that medrash that the Ramban bases everything on, that you have to check only for sirchas on the lung, because that's a mi'ata matzi, that's Ramban's interpretation. The medrash is probably written in Eretz Yisrael, but only in recent years it's only 7.5% is sirchas. So it would appear that 7.5% is called the mi'ata matzi. Shabbos bought about 5%. So Rav Neuvir, the one who wrote the Shemir Shabbos Kol Chasa, used to travel to Argentina to supervise the shechita of the meat that they used to bring into Eretz Yisrael. So he said in Argentina, only 5% of the animals had the sirchas on their lungs. So he said, would you say that because in Argentina, Rabbi Neuwirth said, would you say because in Argentina it's 5%? So it's 5% of Mir Hamotzi. He thinks Menat Mukhayev to be more than Rabbi Yashiv. Mishkan is Yankov thought it's 10% and above. Rabbi Yashiv came up at 7.5% and above. Yeah.
Why does Rabbi Yashiv assume that the percentage of Sirchas in Eretz Yisrael now was the same at the time of the Medrash?
If anything, probably the air is more polluted now. There should be more Sirchas now than ever before. He does not. He said he didn't know. He said it may have stayed the same and it would appear to be 7.5%. Okay. So this Shabbos is a double header. It's a two sefer Torah. We're going to learn Shmini. We're going to learn Parshas Parah. Tov. I'm good. The Shabbos. You too. What's new on Sunday? Holiday. Next Sunday, yeah, I think so. I don't have to prepare a week in advance. Nachon? This Sunday is normal.
It's all Saturday.
Yeah. You know my brother?
Yeah. He's a bit tired now.
Maybe your wife also
wants to use it. He's in the cold there. He had a baby last Pesach, actually.
Yeah. I got your attention. I heard that he got married. Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Okay. You're single, married?
A single, yeah.
Okay. So what do you do? You're a student there?
Yeah, undergrad.
Good for you. Welcome to the yeshiva.
Plus one of the next week for joining this year.
Yeah.
Does Rebbe think we're nicer than New York and maybe use a water filter?
Good idea. You have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Why shouldn't you have a water filter?
And if someone says, like, you eat at someone's house, they don't use a water filter, do you need to be macbeth?
Why not? So tell me you want to drink soda, orange juice, whatever, have something else.